cannot go to their work, cannot go to for medical care if they need it, cannot go for their education in schools or universities. This is the kind of life we live in. And now transportation in the West Bank is totally obstructed because a trip that usually takes 40 minutes could take 5 hours. Sometimes it is totally impossible. On Saturdays, almost the whole West Bank is shut off. So it's a real situation of war, and everything is affected. Trade is affected, economy is affected, medical care is affected. We are unable to reach many people who need our health care.
Dr. Mustafa Barghouti is a medical doctor as well as an activist and a politician who serves as General Secretary of the Palestinian National Initiative. We thank you so much for being with us from Israeli-occupied West Bank, from Ramallah. Dr. Mustafa has been a member of the Palestinian Legislative Council since 2006. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
And this coming Thursday on Words and Pictures, we're talking Democracy Under Siege with filmmaker Laura Nix and political cartoonist Ann Telness. Ann Telness recently quit her job at The Washington Post after her cartoon showing billionaires bowing down to Trump was spiked by the paper. She's the star of a new documentary by Laura Nix, the filmmaker behind The Yes Men Are Revolting. So tune in for a special hour-long Words and Pictures this Thursday, February 13th, from 11 a.m. till noon on your community radio station, KBOO.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News... Warming shelters open tonight as temperatures could reach between 15 and 25 degrees in Oregon and Southwest Washington. Unionized Providence nurses reject a tentative agreement from the hospital system, and a new study shows Oregon needs to do more to help Native students get into higher education. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, February 10th, 2025. I'm Althea Billings. There is a cold weather advisory tonight for much of Oregon and Southwest Washington. Very cold temperatures as low as 15 to 25 degrees are forecasted, with wind it can feel even colder. The National Weather Service advises people who are going outside to dress warmly and make sure their skin is covered. Frostbite and hypothermia will happen if unprotected skin is exposed to these low temperatures. They also advise that people check on older family members, friends, and neighbors. Multnomah County will open 3 severe weather shelters tonight due to the freezing temps. They'll be open at 8 p.m. until at least noon on Tuesday. They could be open longer if the weather is still bad. The warming shelters are Cook Plaza at 19421 Southeast Stark Street in Gresham, the Hollywood Shelter at 1815 Northeast 43rd Avenue in Portland, around the corner from the Hollywood Theater, and the Northwest 14th Avenue Shelter at 600 Northwest 14th Avenue in Portland. The county says that as of last night, there were still available beds at the winter-only shelters operated by Salvation Army in Portland. Each of the warming shelters is ADA accessible. Pets are welcome at these shelters and transportation is available. TriMet will not turn people away who cannot pay the fare while shelters are open. People can also find out about getting transportation to shelters by calling 211. More information about Multnomah County's severe weather response is online at multco.us/cold. Unionized nurses rejected the latest bargaining offer from Providence, meaning the largest healthcare provider strike in Oregon history enters its fifth week. This includes nurses from Providence Portland, Providence St. Vincent, Providence Milwaukee, Providence Willamette Falls, Providence Newburgh, Providence Hood River, Providence Medford, and Providence Seaside. The nurses are unionized with the Oregon Nurses Association, or ONA. They've been in mediation with Providence at the request of the governor. Ann Tan Piazza is the executive director of ONA. She spoke at a press conference on Saturday.
Today, we stand united on behalf of the thousands of nurses who are the lifeblood of our healthcare system. Frontline nurses from seven Providence hospitals across Oregon have spoken loudly and clearly. Providence's latest offers are simply not good enough. They do not go far enough to address the systemic issues that have plagued these hospitals for years, putting both caregivers and our patients at risk. With an historic 92% turnout across all seven bargaining units, ONA members overwhelmingly rejected Providence's offer, with 83% of those voting casting a resounding no. These numbers are not just statistics. They represent the collective voice of thousands of our members who have been unwavering in their dedication to delivering the best possible care to their patients, even working in untenable conditions. Our bargaining teams approached these negotiations with a commitment to get Providence to put their best offer on the table to end the strike. Providence claimed this was the best they can do, and the bargaining teams sent this contract to be voted on by our members. It is clear that this agreement was not good enough. Our members have now made their voices heard with clarity, conviction, and courage. ONA members are demanding what would be fundamental in any healthcare system. Number one, safe staffing, to ensure that the level of care our patients receive reflects their need, with the statutory ratios as a minimum standard, not the only standard. Number two, competitive wages, to recruit and retain the staff that is necessary to achieve safe staffing levels. And number three, affordable healthcare plans, because our caregivers should be able to care for themselves and their families too.
That was ONA Executive Director Ann Tan Piazza. Unionized Providence nurses are still on the picket line, but it's a different story for unionized hospitalists at Providence St. Vincent. Hospitalists are doctors who provide general medical care at the hospital. These 70 unionized doctors voted unanimously to ratify their first contract with Providence. These doctors are unionized with the Pacific Northwest Hospital Medicine Association. They were on strike for the past month alongside ONA nurses. Their new contract outlines wage increases, sick time enhancements, commitments to better staffing, and protections against having their work subcontracted out. But since the nurses at St. Vincent are still on strike, the hospitalists say they'll continue to honor their picket line until the nurses get an agreement. The college-going rate of Oregon high school graduates rose for the first time since the pandemic last year. But equity gaps have not closed for Native American students. A new report outlines what states and institutions can do. Isabel Charlet has the story. Institutions need to do more to close the higher education graduation gap for Native Americans, according to a new report. The report notes at just 25%, Native Americans have the lowest college-going rate of any racial group in the country. Cheryl Crazy Bull with the American Indian College Fund, who helped author the report, recommends states set specific higher education goals focused on increasing Native participation. She adds they should prioritize direct engagement with tribes and schools to provide resources, as well as expanding recruitment practices.
Those practices can often exclude Native students who live in reservation rural areas, as well as urban Native students.
In 2022, Oregon made public universities free for Native students enrolled in one of the state's 9 federally recognized tribes through the Oregon Tribal Stewardship Grant. The program has been gaining steam over the years, but the graduation gap, made larger during the pandemic, has not closed. While Crazy Bull says financial barriers play a big part in preventing Native people from accessing higher education, she adds not all issues can be solved with money.
How the institutions create a place or a sense of belonging for students. That's just a constant effort.
Crazy Bull adds, even before the new administration, anti-DEI practices were harmful to Native students' experiences. Native students can apply for the Oregon Tribal Stewardship Grant until April, as long as funds are available. To qualify for the grant, they must be accepted for enrollment at an Oregon college or university. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Washington state lawmakers are considering a bill that would provide access to free breakfast and lunch for all students. Proponents say access for all cuts down on hunger and the stigma around free school meals. Eric Tegedoff has more.
Legislation in Olympia would make school meals free for every student. Senate Bill 5352 would ensure every student has access to free breakfast and lunch starting in the 2026 school year. Washington State has already made strides in this effort, with 70% of students having access to free meals. But Senate Democrat Marcus Riccielli of Spokane says 70% is a C-, and he wants schools to be an A-plus on this issue.
We know they'll learn, and they can grow and play, and they'll do it in a healthy way. And, by the way, there'll be less disruptions in the classroom. We don't have lunch shaming that goes on, and also there's a significant reduction in administrative burden when every kid has access to universal meals.
Riccielli says school meals for all is essentially a tax cut for working families, noting that the student of a single mother making $19 an hour currently doesn't qualify for free school meals. Organizations such as the American Heart Association are supporting the measure. Critics say the program is too costly, especially while the state faces a budget crunch. Hannah Lamont is a fifth grade teacher in the Edmonds School District and says students can't focus when they're hungry. Lamont says this is the first year all students in her class have received free meals.
This is also the first year that I haven't heard a student say, no, I'm not going to eat lunch today because I don't have money on my account and my parents can't afford to. This is the first year that I haven't given a student my own lunch to make sure that they have eaten or had to keep snacks in my classroom to make sure that my students are fed.
Riccielli says while the state is dealing with a tight budget, it still needs to make investments in schools. He says he's tired of hearing about test scores and graduation rates while kids are hungry at school.
It's just not attainable for a lot of kids. They're going to be sicker. They're going to be distracted if they don't have appropriate nutrition. And that seems like a basic need. And we need to be about first meeting the basic needs of our kids in school.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The head of the new White House Faith Office draws scrutiny. Trump moves to fire the Federal Elections Commission chair, and a North Carolina judge won't toss tens of thousands of ballots in a state Supreme Court race. With more on these stories, it's Catherine Carley with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Wherever I go, God rules. When I walk on White House grounds, God walks on White House grounds.
Florida televangelist Paula White says to say no to President Donald Trump would be saying no to God. The head of the new White House Faith Office was once investigated by the Senate for using tax-exempt donations to pay for her luxury lifestyle. White preaches that God rewards gifts to her church with riches, drawing criticism even from evangelicals. She'll now work with the Justice Department task force to root out what Trump calls anti-Christian bias in government. Federal Elections Commission Chairwoman Ellen Weintraub says Trump is attempting to illegally fire her from the bipartisan agency enforcing campaign finance laws. Weintraub says neutering the FEC would prevent the public from knowing who's funding political candidates.
There is already too much dark money in our system, and without an FEC, there would be even more. Basically, all of it would be dark, and there would be no one out there to enforce the law.
An FEC commissioner can only be removed after a president nominates a successor for Senate confirmation, but Weintraub has been blocked from her office and computers. Trump has fired the head of the National Archives. The independent agency angered Trump and his allies when it sought to get back classified documents he'd taken to Mar-a-Lago. House Republicans have reintroduced the SAVE Act, which would require Americans to prove their citizenship to register to vote. But opponents say many people don't have easy access to birth certificates or passports, including rural residents and those who lost documents in natural disasters. Bianca Rosales with the Students Learn, Students Vote Coalition says studies show strict voter ID laws disproportionately impact 18 and 19-year-olds.
Even though the 26th Amendment to the Constitution says that age should not be a barrier to voting, these voter ID laws are hitting the youngest voters the hardest.
Voting by non-citizens is already illegal and rarely ever happens. In the last election, voters in 8 states approved state constitutional amendments to bar non-citizens from voting. A North Carolina trial judge has dismissed a lawsuit by a Republican state Supreme Court candidate aiming to overturn his election loss by throwing out 60,000 ballots. A lower court and the State Board of Elections have already turned him down, noting the ballots were cast legally and were only challenged after the fact. 3 recounts show the Democratic candidate narrowly won the race. Maxwell Bass is with the North Carolina Black Alliance.
This is not about individuals fraudulently voting. This is about an individual trying to undermine the electoral process of democracy in North Carolina.
That remains the only uncertified statewide race from 2024. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Making Contact. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, a special rebroadcast of episodes 3 and 4 of It Did Happen Here. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy and cold, with an overnight low of 29 degrees in the metro area. A severe weather advisory is in effect until at least 2 a.m. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny with a high of 45. Today in history, in 1996, IBM supercomputer Deep Blue defeats world champion Garry Kasparov in chess for the very first time. The quote of the day is from Russian novelist Dostoevsky, who said, quote, "If you want to be respected by others, the great thing is to respect yourself. Only by that, only by self-respect, will you compel others to respect you." Alaskan communities are honoring the victims of a Bering Air plane crash that killed 10 last week. The National Transportation Safety Board is still investigating why the plane went down. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Investigators are still determining what caused a plane crash near Nome, Alaska on Thursday that killed all 10 people on board. Over the weekend, crews retrieved pieces of the wreckage from an ice floe. As KNOM's Ben Townsend reports, Alaskans joined together to mourn the lives lost in one of the state's deadliest plane crashes in recent decades.
Crews had to act fast over the weekend to get to the crash site before a storm closed in on the region. The Coast Guard says the Cessna Caravan, which was traveling from Unalakleet, crashed on an ice floe 34 miles from Nome, killing the pilot and all 9 passengers on board. Nome Volunteer Fire Department Chief Jim West Jr. says he stressed over who to send to assist in the recovery because several of the first responders knew the victims.
The number of bodies out there or casualties, things like that affects people differently. Do we sacrifice ourselves for the younger crew that's coming up? I mean, we've been through it. We've seen it. we've dealt with it. They haven't.
Crews were able to retrieve the bodies of all 10 victims before freezing rain and high winds hit. Helicopters were seen bringing pieces of the plane back to Nome throughout the afternoon Saturday. National Transportation Safety Board Chair Jennifer Homendy said it's too early to speculate on the cause of the crash. NTSB officials will travel to Nome to inspect the plane parts. At a vigil Saturday night, Unicleet resident Tony Haugen reflected on the impact of the crash.
When the region has something that occurs like this here, it doesn't only affect one community. I mean, we feel the pain region-wide.
Troopers have named the 10 victims, who range in age from 30 to 58. Two were from Nome, including the pilot. Two were from Unicleet, and six were from South Central Alaska. In Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
The state of Indian nations is strong and on the rise, says National Congress of American Indians President Mark Macaro. He delivered the annual Indian Nations Address Monday to tribal leaders who are gathered in Washington, D.C. Macaro says the first few weeks of the new presidential administration has been tumultuous, but says Indian country has the tools to work together, and leaders need to focus on defending tribal rights.
I strongly affirm it's time to speak up. It's time to stand up. Tribal leadership must hold the federal government accountable to these commitments. That's why we are here.
Tribal leaders are attending NCAI's legislative winter session, which wraps up on Thursday. Singer Buffy St. Marie has been stripped of the Order of Canada. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, it comes a year after a CBC investigation that found her claims of Indigenous ancestry were not consistent with public documents.
The Order of Canada is an award that recognizes people who have made a significant contribution to the country. It's presented by the Governor General of Canada. In its more than 50-year history, only 8 people have been expelled from the Order. Buffy St. Marie becomes the 9th. Her award was terminated nearly 30 years after she was appointed in 1997. The investigation found that St. Marie's birth certificate shows that she was born in Massachusetts in 1941, of white parents, and that was witnessed by an attending physician. That's also reaffirmed by a marriage certificate, the U.S. Census, and a life insurance policy. St. Marie has faced these accusations before, but said in the past that she did not misrepresent herself.
I'm an artist, an activist, a mom, a survivor, and a proud member of the Native community with deep roots in Canada.
She also claimed the documentary was full of mistakes and omissions. In a written statement, she said being an Indian has little to do with sperm tracking and colonial record keeping. It has to do with community, culture, knowledge, teachings, and your family. The Governor General's office says it does not comment on the specifics of termination cases. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The aftermath of an extreme weather event means a lot of things, including cleanup and rebuilding. But new research shows a rise in domestic violence also follows major events like storms, floods, and landslides. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Intense storms, floods, and landslides are increasingly common as the climate warms. And these disasters are associated with higher levels of domestic violence against women even long after the weather event is over. In a recent study, Genevieve Minnell of University College London and her team analyzed data about the prevalence of intimate partner violence in 156 countries. They compared it with data about weather disasters in each country.
Our analysis shows that there's an increase in intimate partner violence 2 years after disaster, and that this is correlated with certain types of disasters, specifically storms, landslides, and floods.
Her research did not analyze the reasons for the increase, but other studies suggest that disasters can magnify many risk factors for domestic violence. For example, extreme weather events may contribute to food insecurity.
This can create stress in households in ways that can lead to the use of violence within the household.
And the upheaval caused by a disaster can contribute to substance abuse, which also increases the risk. So Minnell says responding to climate change should include making plans to protect women's safety. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Members of the armed services across the country get significantly worse deals on car loans compared to civilians. That's according to a new report from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Suzanne Potter has more.
Military borrowers pay higher costs and face greater financial risks than civilian borrowers when taking out credit to buy a car, according to a new report from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. The report found service members tend to borrow larger sums at higher interest rates over longer terms. Rosemary Shahan with the Sacramento-based nonprofit Consumers for Auto Reliability and Safety says yo-yo scams are common, where the victim signs an initial contract on good terms, but then the dealer claims the financing fell through.
Then they say, if you don't agree to sign this other contract where we're charging you for a lot of worthless add-ons and a higher interest rate, then we'll report the vehicle stolen and it'll ruin your career.
The report finds many service members are young and far from family members who might help them negotiate a large purchase. Last year, under former President Joe Biden, the Federal Trade Commission finalized the CARS rule, which would combat dishonest sales tactics. Automakers sued, and last month, a federal judge put it on hold. Shahan says the CARS rule would require dealers to tell you the price up front before you even go to the lot.
Prohibits car dealers from representing that they're somehow affiliated with the military when that's not true, and would also require them to be more honest about the price of the add-ons and actually get your affirmative approval.
The FTC under the Trump administration will now have to decide whether to stand behind the rule and fight for it in court or withdraw it. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Foodborne illnesses kill thousands of Americans each year, but advocates say a new report from the Government Accountability Office with recommendations to combat these illnesses looks familiar to those of years past. Simone Perez has the details.
Foodborne illnesses from meat and poultry products kill thousands of people a year, and a new report from the Government Accountability Office offers ways to cut down on those illnesses. The report finds that federal food inspectors face two main challenges to reduce pathogens in meat and poultry: developing standards as the industry changes for pathogens, and limited oversight outside of the slaughterhouses and processing plants. Some advocates, though, say it's not much different from past reports. J.D. Hansen with the Center for Food Safety says the recommendations are essentially the same as previous reports to the Department of Agriculture.
The big challenge is that the GEO has been giving advice to the U.S. Department of Agriculture for a number of years now that they need, pardon the pun, literally clean up their act and make sure that they are doing their job to make our food safe.
More than 18,000 Virginians are employed in the poultry industry and contributes more than $12 billion in economic activity in the Commonwealth. The Government Accountability Office says federal oversight of food safety has been on its high-risk list since 2007. The list comprises programs and operations that are vulnerable to waste, fraud, abuse, or mismanagement. Hansen explains that part of the issue stems from concentrated feeding operations.
When we crowd beef and pork and chickens into these concentrated feeding operations, it's just like taking the kids into kindergarten for the first time. They all get sick. The difference is, when our kids get sick, we take them home until they're well. When animals get sick, they get butchered.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention finds that some 3,000 people die from foodborne illnesses each year. I'm Simone Perez, Virginia News Connection.
A key part of combating climate change is reducing harmful emissions from meat production on so-called factory farms. One group is calling for tougher regulations to cut the amount of emissions. Mark Richardson spoke with Rebecca Wolf from Food and Water Watch to learn more.
Most of the environmental community agrees that finding viable solutions to a warming climate is an urgent issue, but there are widely divergent views on how to best accomplish the task. A large segment of the debate focuses on the impact of emissions from meat production. Rebecca Wolf with the nonprofit Food and Water Watch says large corporate-owned operations are a significant part of the emissions problem.
The factory farm system did not happen by accident. It is a series of policy choices that have let these companies get really big and then let them create this type of agriculture. Factory farming is not natural, it's not normal, it's not inevitable, but it is a choice.
Climate change is driven by greenhouse gases such as carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide, and there are two main strategies to combat it: carbonization and carbon removal. Wolf says lowering emissions should be prioritized over carbon renewal because of the latter's high cost and slow process. Wolf argues against processes that digest animal waste and create biofuels, requiring large volumes of excrement, which exacerbates the problem. She believes they allow the factory farm system to continue without meaningful reform while still emitting significant amounts of greenhouse gases.
The barrier there is the way in which the food system is designed, and these companies are so big that we need to start to pry them apart and make real policy choices that prioritize small, medium-sized regional food economies.
Wolf says groups such as Food and Water Watch are keeping a close eye on how to stop big industries from getting away with so much pollution. She says lawmakers need to reevaluate farming practices and prioritize those whose practices minimize pollution.
A lot of what we see, especially because they're the big new ideas that come from the industry themselves that are doing the polluting, is a lot of climate scam, a lot of schemes that don't actually move us away from climate pollution, but rather allow these companies to profit off their climate pollution.
For Ohio News Connection, I'm Mark Richardson.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, February 10th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegedoff, Isabel Charlet, Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Simone Perez, Suzanne Potter, Mark Richardson, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Making Contact.